You're listening to The Monocle Arts Review. I'm Ben Ryland, and today's show is all about New York's theatre scene and the unlikely places that actors have been popping up across the city. Over there in the Big Apple is our theatre critic, Matt Wolf, who's been trawling the theatres to let us know what's on this November. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Now, we're talking about stars in unlikely places today, Matt, so why do you think there's been so many of this?
Well, for one thing, I think theater in New York is kind of cool for all sorts of reasons. I mean, you know, a lot of actors, if they do film and television, they like to have a live public. Wow, that's a bit of a shock. And it doesn't have to be Broadway. You can do, like, we're going to talk about a concert performance with a major actor that was only on for a couple of days. David Hyde Pierce is in a tiny little play off Broadway. Rachel Weisz is in a play off Broadway. It doesn't have to be big, glitzy numbers. You can ply your wares anywhere that there's a stage and an audience.
Well, the first play we'll discuss today is one that had a short run last week but deserves a mention. It's Stephen Sondheim's Pulitzer Prize-winning musical Sunday in the Park with George. It was performed last week at the New York City Center starring Jake Gyllenhaal, who is perhaps probably not the first name that would spring to mind when you think about who might star in this. Am I right about that?
Oh, yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, this is a show from 1984 that was immortalized by the great Mandy Patinkin, who had to play the pointillist painter Georges Seurat, and then his ancestor in the second act. And what's extraordinary is that, you know, Jake Gyllenhaal wants to do this. You know, he doesn't have to do this. He's got an A-list movie career. So he's taking time out of that to play Seurat for four performances at City Center, packed houses. But what is most extraordinary is that he was bloody good. Who knew that he actually has a proper singing voice? And also singing Sondheim and singing this Sondheim is all very, very difficult. And he really met it with great aplomb. I read somewhere that they had 20 hours of rehearsal. So, you know, that the performance was as accomplished as it was with that little time makes you wonder what would happen if they were to do a full production with him.
In a way, it almost feels as though people like Jake Gyllenhaal starring productions like this are perhaps attracting a whole crowd to plays and productions like Sunday in the Park with George that perhaps wouldn't otherwise be interested in this style of show. He is, of course, everywhere at the moment because Nocturnal Animals are still rolling out around the world.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. And there's a lot of buzz about that. And he was supposed to come to Broadway, actually, in the spring in a revival of the Lanford Wilson play Burn This, but that's now been postponed. So maybe he wants to do Sunday in the Park somewhere else. I think, you know, actors like a challenge. And he is, you know, an East Coast guy. I'm sure that he grew up going to the New York theater. And maybe he just thought, you know, doing four performances at City Center is a nice way to dip your toe in the water to see if you can do it. And also if you like doing it without having to sign on for 6 months. And then if you don't like it, it's too late. So this is a good way to just kind of test it. And I wouldn't be surprised if he comes back for more.
Well, I was just about to ask that, actually, Matt. With your ear to the boards of the theatres over there in New York, have you heard any rumblings about whether this might make a return at some point?
I haven't heard about that because I think people are sort of assuming if he postponed Burn This, he's not going to replace it with another play. But what I did hear, but this is only hearsay, was that there might be rumblings of doing a movie of Sunday in the Park with George. And, of course, then Mr. Gyllenhaal could star on screen. That, I have to say, would be kind of a bizarre notion just because of the way Sunday in the Park is structured. It's got two very distinct, very different acts, and I'm not quite sure how you would bring them together on screen. So, as they say, Ben, watch this space.
Absolutely. I look forward to that. Hopefully it actually does happen. It's just far too long between drinks when it comes to musicals on the screen at the moment. But let's move on and head to the Roundabout Theatre now, where the Oscar-winning actor Joel Grey is starring opposite Diane Lane in a production of Chekhov's The Cherry Orchard. I absolutely love Diane Lane. But before we get to that, Matt, remind me, what is the plot of this classic?
Well, this is Anton Chekhov's last play, you know, considered one of the great plays of the 20th century, written at the very beginning of the 20th century, basically about a feckless woman, Madame Ranevskaya, who is the Diane Lane character, whose beloved Russian estate is being sold out from under her. And so it's basically a play about abandonment and loss and kind of the end of a social order. Although you wouldn't necessarily know that from this production, not because I dislike the production, a lot of it I quite liked, but it's one of these these sort of timeless, placeless stagings where it doesn't necessarily scream Russia, and it certainly doesn't scream turn of the 19th into the 20th century. It kind of exists out of time. And I think the idea, particularly in a city like New York, which doesn't feast on Chekhov the way London so happily does, is to make it, maybe that dreaded word, accessible for contemporary audiences in a way that it might not be if everyone was dressed in period clothing.
Talk to me about Diane Lane in this, because I am a huge fan of her on the screen, but quite lately, it does feel as though films, at least mainstream big blockbuster films, have taken a bit of a downturn when it comes to variety of roles offered to people. And Diane Lane has really been relegated to Superman's mum for way, way, way too long. What's she like on stage?
Well, I'm totally with you. I'm a great fan of her in any iteration that I can see her. And what's wonderful for her doing this is that, and I actually saw it when I was a very young boy, Ben, I hasten to add, there was a production of The Cherry Orchard in my infancy in 1977 in which she as a child, was sort of a supernumerary on stage, just kind of swelling the ranks. And it was a famous production all those years ago. And now she's returned to the New York stage as a movie star to play one of the great roles in the canonical theater. And she's really lovely. One thing about her, first of all, she looks great. And the theater, she's in her 50s now. And the theater, of course, for women in their 50s, gives you the sorts of roles that you don't get, as you rightly say, in movies. And the other thing about her, which isn't always the case with actors when they do stage work, is that she's got a proper voice. She's got a really good theater voice that carries and it has resonance. And that's rather wonderful.
Is that theater voice that you mentioned, what's it like to see someone that you've seen on the screen then get up on stage and maybe project a theater voice like that? Is it quite different? Is it quite jarring to what you might expect?
Well, I remember Jessica Lange, who is an actress I adore, and she just won the Tony Award in June for her performance in Long Day's Journey and Tonight. But when she first appeared on Broadway in 1992 in A Streetcar Named Desire, everyone said it was one of the greatest Broadway performances in history if you were in the first five rows. Beyond that, it didn't carry. In other words, she was playing to an invisible camera. Since then, she's learned. But Diane Lane hasn't had to learn because she's, I think, always known it.
Well, that is The Cherry Orchard on at the Roundabout Theatre until the 4th of December. And we're downsizing now to a tiny studio theatre off-Broadway for a new play by Adam Bock. It's called A Life and sees Frasier actor David Hyde Pierce take up the role of the hopelessly single Nate Martin, who turns to the stars to try to question his past and work out his place in life. Matt, this has been divisive amongst critics. Was it divisive amongst Matt Wolff?
It wasn't. Matt Wolff entirely loved it. I thought it was absolutely thrilling. Talk about a change of pace. David Hyde Pierce, with whom, by the way, I was at university, but that's not why I liked him in this, because that was a while ago. But he's segueing from this in the spring. He's going to be Bette Midler's co-star in the new Broadway revival of Hello, Dolly. So I guess if you're going to do the most eagerly anticipated musical of the season for an audience of zillions, it's quite nice before that to do a rather haunting, poetic play that embraces issues of mortality or maybe even immortality in front of an audience of about 150. Adam Bock's play is not naturalistic. It sort of defies easy analysis. There's a lot about it you can't really give away in plot terms because then you'll ruin it. But suffice it to say that what you think it is at the beginning is not at all what it is at the end. And I've seen David Hyde Pierce. I mean, he's a New York theater animal long before Frasier, and he returns to the theater all the time. And this is the best I've ever seen him. It's a really, really accomplished performance. And it's quite quietly harrowing, not with kind of neon lights, but just it gets inside you in the way that disturbing plays really often do.
Well, I'm very tempted to discuss only that revival of Hello, Dolly, because that just sounds like beyond anything that could be imagined on the stage.
Yeah. We'll get to that in due course.
To that.
Bette Midler playing Dolly Levi, who knew?
But just quickly on this one, we did mention just there that it has been it's been divisive amongst critics. What have the main criticisms been then?
Of A Life, the main criticisms, I think, it's got the kind of structure you either go with or you don't. And you either go on the journey that Adam Bock is taking you on, where you have to surrender a certain sort of belief in plays having a beginning, a middle, and an end that follow a sort of approved course. And I'm not one of these observers who thinks that plays should be anything. I think they are what they are, as long as they're good. And this is very, very good. I should say, at the performance I saw, there was a woman who had such an empathic response to the play towards the end. It's 80 minutes straight through, no interval, that I thought the show was going to have to be stopped because it looked like she was having a stroke. But she recovered and carried on, which is appropriate, I think, for a play called Alive.
My goodness. Good for her, at least. Alive is on at the Peter J. Sharp Theatre until the 27th of November. Now, it doesn't seem that long, Matt, since we last discussed Dangerous Liaisons here on the Monocle Arts Review when it was playing here in London, but now it's a hit on Broadway with Liev Schreiber and Janet McTeer taking up the roles. Now, McTeer continues from the performance at the Donmar, but Schreiber has replaced Dominic West. How do the performances compare?
Well, it's fascinating because when I saw it at the Donmar, I guess about a year or so ago, it was really Janet McTeer's show. She owned the production. For one thing, she's so physically extraordinary. She's a big and beautiful actress. And so it takes a certain kind of actor to stand up to her, quite literally, because she tends to dwarf most of her co-stars. And Dominic West, a very, very good actor in other things and wonderful on TV in The Affair and so on. But he just seemed sort of out of his element. It was quite bizarre. And Liev Schreiber, who, of course, is an American actor, but he has a lot of experience doing theater of all sorts, has no qualms whatsoever about owning a stage and standing up to Ms. McTeer. And he, for my mind, gave the production a danger that that Les Liaisons Dangereuses benefits from. I will say, though, that it's very odd, Ben, with this, because Dominic West in London seemed to be having line problems that apparently persisted throughout the run there. And in New York, the night I saw it, Liev Schreiber was having line problems. And I wonder whether these actors look at Janet McTeer and they're sort of rendered speechless.
That's an interesting theory. One would hope that she's not quite that foreboding.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe the directors will have to take these actors aside and say, you know, there's a certain sort of Janet McTeer defense mechanism that has to go into gear here. It's really bizarre.
Talk me through the enduring appeal of this story, though, because it is something that has been reinterpreted a number of times to various different degrees of success, isn't it?
Yeah, I think what people like about it is it's sex and danger, and it's kind of, you know, malicious, but elegantly so. And you've got the Marquise de Merteuil, the Janet McTeer character, and the Vicomte de Valmont, the Liev Schreiber character, who are one-time lovers, sort of coming back into one another's orbit in order to wreak sexual havoc on the next generation, the younger generation, which they proceed to do. So people love watching beautifully dressed people do terrible things.
Well, that's on at the Booth Theatre until the 22nd of January. And finally, Matt, we've got just enough time to talk about what you're looking forward to for you over the next couple of weeks, perhaps. Give us a little bit of intel.
Well, a bit of intel. We like it when couples are on stage, but in this case, they're not on stage together, which is interesting. So Rachel Weisz, the Oscar-winning actress who now lives in New York, is in a not very good production of David Hare's Plenty. And in a few weeks, her husband, Daniel Craig, is going to open a few streets away from where Rachel Weisz now is in a much-anticipated production of Othello, in which Mr. Craig is going to play Iago. So James Bond is Iago. I am so there.
Absolutely. That sounds amazing. And look, we've got just enough time to go back to that little bit of news you mentioned earlier with Bette Midler returning to the stage. Is there any hint on whether that will expand beyond American shores?
Well, I don't know. You know, Bette Midler's no youngster, bless her heart, but it is wonderful that she wants to do this. There was a lot of speculation about, because she said she wouldn't do 8 shows a week, which is the Broadway norm. So what they've done is they've cast a 2-time Tony Award-winning actress, Donna Murphy, the original star of Sondheim's Passion, who's going to do the Tuesday night shows. So that means that Ms. Midler can have a long, proper weekend, Sunday night, all day Monday, all day Tuesday. And then she can sail back into full glorious view on Wednesday for the rest of the week. And I mean, it should be extraordinary. It's amazing to think it's, what, about a half century since Streisand did the film? And here's Bette Midler doing a revival all these years later.
Well, that does sound remarkable. However, if you were to see the Tuesday night show, you perhaps wouldn't be telling your friends that you went on a Tuesday, would you?
Well, Donna Murphy has kind of a cult following. So, you know, I think Tuesday night will be the real Broadway diehards, and Wednesday will be the people who've paid Hamilton price tickets. I mean, the tickets are flying out the box office like, you know, so many hotcakes. Hamilton now has some competition.
I'm not surprised at all. And no offense to lovely Miss Donna Murphy, of course. That does bring us to the end of today's program. Thanks to my guest, Matt Wolf, all the way over there in New York. You have been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Ben Ryland. The show is produced by Holly Fisher. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow for our literary discussion. But for now, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening.